everybody. Welcome to the very first edition of TechVision TV. I'm Steve Rosenbaum, and I'm here with Saul Hansel. Saul, welcome.
It's great after 15 years to be joining the podcast revolution.
You know, the revolution is just beginning today, and quick introductions. My name is Steve Rosenbaum. I'm a writer and blogger and now podcaster. Saul, introduce yourself.
I am a writer, blogger, occasional entrepreneur, among other things as well. We share some interest in internet video.
And, you know, just to begin with, I thought it would be good to talk a little bit about what we learned in getting this podcast ready. I mean, we thought it was going to be plug and play, right? I mean, we thought you'll just turn it on and there'll be cameras. And it turned out it's a little earlier than I think I realized.
So even though people have been doing this for a long time, you went and Steve is the tech guy of this operation. So we said, how do we actually film it and get it up? And why wasn't it as easy as just downloading something and running?
So two things that I learned. One, every single piece of software that I found that said it did some kind of video podcast almost inevitably was built for Twitch, which I thought was fascinating. I mean, Twitch is a live gaming network, and really screencasting, as it's known, is really almost entirely been driven by gamers, which is fascinating, and is almost entirely Mac-based. I'm sorry, not Mac-based, PC-based. And so we ended up switching, because we're Mac on this side and Mac on your side, to a service called OBS, which is an open source broadcast platform that actually is pretty awesome, but really early. Like, when you see, when I switch cameras from here to here to here, there's no fancy transition, there's no dissolve. These are straight cuts, because that's all OBS has today. So you'll see this podcast develop as OBS develops and as we get better tools and better microphones and better gear. But for now, it's pretty early days. Consider this an alpha podcast, would be what I would say.
Alpha in the alpha cat sense, no doubt.
Indeed. So let's begin with the news of the week. You know, both of us are avid readers, and this has been a very, very busy week in the video tech blog space. And so I thought I would just pick your brain a little bit. What do you make of the Hulu ad-free rumor offering?
So I think we're at this moment, and it look, you know, and if you compare this to a year ago, it's happened very quickly, where the streaming services are competing, the independent streaming services and the offerings of all the established media companies are competing on a much more level playing field, and there is a phenomenal amount of innovation, right? So Hulu is looking at competing, among other things, with Amazon and Netflix, but also with HBO and Showtime, and saying, hey, wait a second, we've had this dual revenue stream model, $8 or $9 plus commercials, and there are people who don't like commercials, and they have a choice. So guess what? On the internet, we're going to give them a choice. Or so the Wall Street Journal reports, you could pay $9 with commercials, or $12 or $14 without commercials. And I have a suspicion that that is going to be the way television works 5 years from now.
You know, I think back to the early days of cable, and the whole thing that made cable magical was the dual revenue stream, right? That there was a subscriber fee and then there was an ad opportunity. I wonder if they're not wandering down a bad path here.
You know, at the end of the day, right, we don't have a cable industry that gets together and in their oligopolistic way, originally under the big arms of John Malone, decides what it's going to do. We have anybody and her brother creating multi-channel services, single-channel services. So you can't say we're going to do it one way because it's better for the industry. The consumer is going to vote. And I think if you have things that are on the demand curve, it reduces the friction, right? So you say, all right, you want to pay less? You don't care about this content, right? This is only so-so. It's free with ads or cheap with ads in a bundle. But, you know, how many people would drop their HBO fee from $15 to $7 in return for 30% of Game of Thrones having commercials in it, right? I think that that's a choice the consumers are going to want so much that the market is going to give to them.
So, by the way, I got a letter today from my broadband provider, Roadrunner, offering me phone and television for a year for an additional $20 a month.
You are a broadband only subscriber.
Correct.
And how much TV are they giving you for $20?
That's a good question. Honestly, it was I'm always suspicious of anyone that gives you anything for a year because the bill 12 months from now is going to go up exponentially. It's all customer acquisition costs, so I didn't read it that closely. But
of course, and frankly, you know, some of them, Comcast, will give you something for a year on a 2-year contract without being so precise about what the go-to rate is. I have gone back and forth with them. But we are in this era where there is a lot of experimentation around the demand curve, right? So a couple of news stories from this week, right? Both Verizon and Comcast are talking about preparing what they call an OTT bundle, a bundle of content that is delivered over their broadband, either to their broadband subscribers or to somebody else's broadband subscribers. So you'll be able to get the Comcast bundle at some price if you have Time Warner Cable and vice versa. So suddenly we have multiple players competing against each other. You know, Sling TV and Sony were the first ones in this market, and everyone's going to try. And we'll, you know, and so we're going to have enormous experimentation. One of the interesting features of this was that the bundle is made up of a combination of traditional cable broadcasters who make linear channels and folks like Vice who make on-demand clips mainly. I mean, Vice keeps playing around with wanting to make a network. But Vice is now part, or has said they're going to be part of the Verizon bundle. Which, as you point out, gives them access to a dual revenue stream. Because suddenly they're going to get some subscriber revenue when they basically hit zero. So the industry is moving more towards the dual revenue stream of cable, not away from it.
So the coverage of this, though, says essentially they're going after, you know, not cable cutters as much as cable nevers, millennials, right? That's really what their fear is, that if they don't actually offer up something to people who haven't yet made a choice about how they're going to consume over-the-top content, they risk that they're never going to reach them at all. Is that a fair analysis?
You know, what order this happens in depends on, you know, things like, what are you hooked into and how much are you a sports fan? But ultimately, there's, you know, TV's just bits. So the logical structure, to my mind, of TV in the go-to state is you have a wire coming to your house that you pay for, and then you pay for bits to go on top of that in some, probably in a series of bundles and add-ons. And, I mean, Comcast knew that. I mean, I spent time back when I covered cable in some other century, and they knew it. I mean, everyone knows where it's going. It will be a, you know, 15-year transition, but this year has been very fast.
Which brings us to the current king of the realm, Netflix. I mean, the numbers are staggering.
And continue to be. So they surprised Wall Street on the upside, adding 3.3 million subscribers to a total of 65. The stock shot up from astronomical heights to higher yet. And, you know, they priced themselves, even if you're new and it's $10 to get in, as, you know, a why the hell not, considering what they've got. And, you know, Amazon is no slouch either, but has a very different sort of bundling strategy. And we have as evidence, either as confirmation or as a sign, you know, you can call it marketing budget or you can call it, you know, something else, but both Netflix and this year Amazon did very well in the Emmys, right? Loosely speaking, the cable guys led by HBO had the most Emmy nominations, but Netflix and Amazon were in a second tier, and the traditional broadcast players over the air, you know, and the important awards got fewer nominations than Netflix or Amazon. So there's a new pecking order that has appeared in the last couple of years.
So, I mean, do you think that this is the new normal, or do you think it's, you know, what happens when HBO Now releases, you know, their live news product from Vice?
TV gets better. I mean, I think that right now HBO is on a roll. Right? I mean, we're, you know, and they have lots of money and their audience loves them. Netflix has lots of money and their audience loves them. Amazon has lots of money, and I'm not totally sure if their audience understands them because they're complicated, but they have some good shows. So I think that those are players that will continue to innovate and will continue to make things that people like to watch. I mean, HBO's model is, I think, copyable by some people, right? I mean, we can, you know, if you're spending $80 on cable and you say, well, maybe I should spend $15 on HBO and $10 each on, you know, Hulu and Netflix, and I get my Amazon free with my shipping, never mind the rest of it. That may not be a choice that, you know, that's what I suspect we're going to do in our household.
Well, you know, I'll only say this, you know, hits are really hard.
Yes.
And Netflix, you know, they were very, very lucky. You know, House of Cards was a massive success. You know, they don't release numbers, so you really don't know what a massive success means. It was a critical darling, and it seemed to be viewed by a lot of people in our circles. But I think that what everyone's going to find is, at the end of the day, when you've got dollars from Amazon and dollars from HBO and dollars from Netflix, and they're all chasing leading directors and leading writers and leading actors, it's going to become like television, very, very, very competitive.
So the question is it random enough that as that competition goes, the hits will get spread around, or is there some structural reason why somebody's got more deep pockets or more skills or more distribution that, you know, as things shake out, somebody's going to end up with the lion's share of the programs that people really care about?
I'll tell you one thing that I think gets forgotten. I was at a conference the other day with a bunch of smart internet people, and there was a discussion about Amazon Prime and whether you could even compare it to Netflix. Because you make a purchasing decision every month to spend $9 to get Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
You spend the same purchasing decision once a year at Amazon to get free shipping.
Yep.
So it's really, you know, I mean, the decision to cancel Netflix, you could say 1 month I'll do Netflix, 1 month I'll do HBO. Amazon doesn't give you that kind of like optionality. I'm just going to kind of spin in. So all the video you get from Amazon Prime is essentially thrown in there as a freebie.
And so what do you think, you know, as this thing spins out, how does that affect, you know, how Amazon can compete and how people see Amazon? Is that a benefit for Amazon because they can get hook people in, or is it not a benefit?
I think it's a benefit. Well, I'll tell you this. As a user, when I go to Netflix, I watch what the offering is. When I go to Amazon, I watch what the offering is. And then I sometimes, when I run out of choices in a category, go deeper into their pay video category, and I buy something. Netflix doesn't offer me that, and HBO doesn't offer me that.
It's an interesting choice whether a consumer service should have multiple offerings. I remember talking to Pandora, right? Why Pandora doesn't let you pay a little extra to turn into a streaming service so that you can rewind or buy things. They thought that the simplicity of their offering was part of the proposition, and their ratings still are very good, even though they don't get as much noise as Spotify and Apple. Netflix is obsessed with focus. The good thing and the bad thing on Amazon is it will sell you everything every way, and it gets a little confusing. And it's, you know, that because there's, you know, I get my, you know, windshield wipers, and I can get my fresh milk, and I can get, you know, my movies and God knows what else, you know, and they'll sell me hardware they design. And I mean, I have enormous respect for them, but it's a complicated proposition.
All right, so let's talk about next week, because it's going to be a big week in the video space at a conference that neither you nor I have ever been to. I am, for the very first time, trekking to Anaheim, California, scenic Anaheim, to go to VidCon. And we were talking before the show about the fact that it may be the only conference that both you and your kids would be interested in going to.
I mean, it's an, you know, I guess this has been a fan-like conference that connected YouTube stars with YouTube audience. And those folks, you know, such as Andrew Wang, who did the great hit Pink Fluffy Unicorns Dancing on Rainbows that my children dance to, and Paint, or John Kozar, who's done any number of things that, you know, a lot of Disney parodies that they're in love with, and, you know, some of the very smartest industry people around, including Susan Wojcicki, the CEO of YouTube. Katie Couric is going to be there, and so many others. So you've got this moment where in the video world, people don't know what's pro, what's amateur anymore.
Yeah, I'm not sure that that distinction necessarily applies. I will tell you, I'm speaking on Friday at VidCon in the professional category. There's a new industry track. So I'm not there to sign autographs for my fans. And I'm not a YouTube star. But I am told from people that have gone for years that it is very much like Comic-Con. It is entire madness, and that I should be prepared for there to be a level of hysteria and screaming 14-year-olds that maybe will flash back to, like, the Beatles, concert. It'll be fascinating. I'm interested to report
back. We're looking forward to a report. You're going to be telling the YouTube people some of what you've learned about curation at Waywire that can help somebody who's building a YouTube career, how to do things better. What are the main things you're going to offer them as to from the curation world?
Well, there's always been this kind of sense that there's a battle between curators and creators, and that creators don't want to be curated and curators don't want to be makers. And I'm basically there to suggest that in the world we're moving into, where you really need to have a significant footprint on your channel and a lot of content, that creators can also be curators, that those two roles are not exclusive. And then, in fact, you can say, here's my video of the day, and here's also five other videos I really like that I want to share with my fans, and that people will be glad to have your take as both the creator and curator. So that's kind of an advanced look at the talk I'm going to give. And, you know, we'll see how it goes. I mean, they may throw Rotten Tomatoes at me, or I may be popular. I'll be on the red eye Friday night, so hopefully I won't have tomato stains on my clothes.
Well, if you do, it will make for a good story, and take a picture of yourself, take a selfie that you will show to our budding podcast audience of somebody other than just you and me by next week.
I will do that, and I will bring back selfies and photographs and video. For those of you who watch this as a video podcast, you'll get to see that. And, of course, for those of you listening on audio, you'll just have to accept our rather expansive description of the pictures. So with that, we're wrapping up week one. Saul, have an excellent week. Enjoy web video.
And I will see you back here a week from today.
See you next week.
Okay, bye-bye.